Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Vegan Protein's Muscles by Brussels Radio. My name is Giacomo.
And I'm Danny.
And this is our seventh episode. And today we'll be speaking about how to set up a successful fat loss plan as a vegan.
All right, everybody, and welcome back, and thank you for tuning in. It's kind of hard to believe that we're going to start talking about this now because we here in Massachusetts are covered in, what is it, like 73 inches of snow we've had so far?
Yeah, like foot on top of foot. It's just snow everywhere.
Every time you think, like, there can't possibly be any more snow in the sky, and then you turn on the news and there's more snow coming 2 days later. So we just had three straight days of nonstop snow. Today was relatively nice outside. More snow on Thursday and Friday, and then another storm on the weekend.
On Sunday, yeah, it's just not nonstop.
So we hope that at least some people listening to this are in some beautiful, sunny, and warm place, but we are very, very much so not. But so like I said, it's hard to believe we're talking about this already, but for many people, now is the time to start thinking about getting ready for summer. So a lot of people have spent a good portion of the winter, you know, bulking up and building muscle. And now everybody's sort of ready to shed their winter coat and start making plans for the summer and their fitness goals for the summer.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are thinking about it now, but it's like anything else. The sooner you're planning ahead, the more successful you'll be. So it's important to really figure out where you're going to be now because, I mean, how often do you see people coming in a week or two before they want their vacation body? It's like, you know, I want to look like this in 5 days. It's too little too late. I mean, you really need to plan ahead for this kind of stuff.
Well, people don't usually come in 5 days early. That's a bit of an exaggeration. No, it's a huge exaggeration.
No, I don't think so.
But
I mean,
people
I've seen
will
it
come
happen.
To me, you know, a month before their vacation or their event or their whatever and say, hey, I want to lose this much weight and this. And that's not the type of thing that I do. I don't do that with people. I don't think it's safe or sustainable or anything like that. So if you have big plans that you want to look a certain way for in the summer, now is the time to at least start planning it. So we've sort of broken this down into 10 tips on how to set up a fat loss or cutting diet as vegan. Now these rules, a lot of them apply. I mean, they apply for anybody, vegan or not vegan. And they're not all hard and fast rules, but they're really great guidelines to get you started.
Number one, give yourself ample time. For the best results, you want to plan to make progress over time. If you do everything too fast, chances are you're not going to get the results you're looking for the long term.
Right. And also, if you remember back in like our second episode or something like that, we talked about how much muscle it was possible to build in a certain period of time. And the reverse is the same. If you try to lose weight or lose fat too fast, you are going to burn off that muscle, which, as we discussed, is super hard to put on. You should be aiming to lose no more than 1 to 2 at the absolute max pounds per week. So let's say you have 20 pounds to lose. This is going to take you between 10 and 20 weeks if you have 20 pounds of fat to lose. So you want to set your diet or your plan up in that time frame to be successful and not have to crash diet, end up burning off all this muscle for the sake of just hitting a certain number on a scale.
Right. I mean, you know, and some people just, when they think of fat loss, some people feel like they can just burn off the muscle. It's not a big deal. They just want to be skinny. You know, they just want the scale to go down. And a lot of people don't realize when they want to achieve that toned or that fit look, that your muscle is responsible for that. So if you start burning away your muscle, then, you know, you're not going to have that toned or fit look when you burn off the fat.
Yeah, you just end up looking like a smaller version of your former self. The term for skinny fat, it's when you're technically skinny or, you know, of a healthy or even a lowish weight, but your body fat percentage is still really high, which is, you know, high body fat percentage is unhealthy whether you're of normal weight or overweight. It doesn't matter. High body fat percentage is not good for you. So the aim is definitely to lower that, not just the number on the scale. But also giving yourself enough time gives you time to reevaluate when you hit plateaus you're going to hit plateaus. It happens in any fat loss diet, and you want to give yourself time to sort of bounce back from them. Plus, you know, shit happens. You could get sick. A family event could come up. Something could set you back a week. And if you've only given yourself a measly 6 weeks to get ready, then you're going to be screwed if something comes up.
Number two, accurately track what you eat. The more data that you collect on yourself while you're looking to change your body and achieve your goals, the better off your results are going to be. You are your own experiment, and ultimately every body is different. Everyone's going to respond to things differently, from the types of foods you eat or don't eat to the way that you exercise or don't exercise. You know, as you change things, you're going to figure out what your body is responding to faster, slower, in a good way, in a bad way, whatever it is. Keep track of what you're doing.
I've said this pretty much in every single episode we've had so far. I'm a huge fan of tracking what you eat, even more so when you have a goal that has a deadline, such as a wedding or a show, you know, a figure show or bikini show or whatever. When you have a deadline like that, tracking everything you eat is so important, because when you're that in tune with what you're eating, you feel every little thing that you change. And it's important to know what is working for you and what is not working for you. And I mean, you should record everything. You should record your slip ups. You should record your mistakes, because who knows, maybe one day you accidentally end up overeating by a couple hundred calories, and the next day your muscles look full and hard and round and you feel leaner. Well, that's good to know. That helped you out. I can give you an idea of where you're at.
Yeah, so maybe you can apply that as a tool in the future for your program.
Exactly. You know, once you learn more about how your body responds to certain things in certain states, you are going to be much better off making changes that are going to help you be successful along the way. So always, and especially when you're cutting, always track what you eat one way or another, whether it's pen or paper, an Excel spreadsheet on your computer, an app on your phone, doesn't matter. Just keep track of it.
Exactly. Number three, hydrate well.
This is a big one that gets overlooked a lot. I feel like most people have heard the saying that many people mistake their thirst for hunger, or a lot of times people think they're hungry when they're actually thirsty, and you know, that leads to overeating and things like that. Well, I don't know what the exact number is for that, but it is definitely true that dehydration is often mistaken as hunger. And usually by the time you feel thirsty, you're already dehydrated.
Yeah, like if you have that feeling in your mouth where you're parched a little bit, or your tongue just feels a little dry, like Danny said, that's the point where it's already too late. You should have been drinking far more water by then.
Right. So you can nip that in the bud by regularly drinking water throughout the day. And obviously this helps with satiety a lot. It just makes you feel fuller. If you've ever drank, you know, 28 ounces of water, like chugged it down, you know that you feel pretty full right after that. So a lot of times when you're dieting, you tend to be hungrier, which makes sense because you're in a caloric deficit. Making sure that you are not dehydrated is going to help keep you feel full, keep you from overeating.
Yeah, I mean, also water is responsible for so many of your body's processes on a cellular level. I mean, your red blood cells need to transport oxygen. If your body's dehydrated, you're not getting oxygen from your brain to your body. And I mean, as you can imagine, that can create a slew of problems from not just from exercise, just from daily function. And when you're looking to lose fat, you're going to be obviously at some sort of a caloric deficit. And it's really important to keep positive and be energetic, and it's not going to be helpful if you're dehydrated.
When you're dehydrated, you just feel really sluggish.
Yeah.
Now also, when you're dehydrated, your body basically finds a way to pull water from anywhere that it can within your body, and a lot of times that's from your fat cells themselves. So your body pulls water out of these fat cells. The fat cells are, you know, small and dehydrated, and a dehydrated fat cell is far less likely to be burned off for fuel.
Yeah.
So
you can't use your body for energy if your cells are dehydrated, basically.
And also, being dehydrated affects your kidneys. When your kidneys aren't working super well, your liver sort of picks up the slack for that. And your liver is responsible for a host of things, like getting rid of toxins. But it also plays a role in fat metabolism. So if your liver's doing the kidneys' job, it's probably not helping with fat metabolism that much. So hydration, so overlooked. Definitely be sure to be hydrated. How much water do you drink? That's a good question, actually. There's no hard and fast rule here. That 8 8-ounce glasses of water thing is bullshit. I don't know where anybody got that number from. What I like to do is the minimum amount of water that I recommend people drink is their body weight in pounds cut in half. So I'm 140 pounds. Half of that, I drink a minimum of 70 ounces of water a day.
8 to 9 glasses.
But normally I drink a gallon of water a day, which is, what, 128? I think it's 128 ounces. And, you know, Giacomo is a bigger guy. He drinks 1.5 to 2 gallons of water a day. He drinks a lot of water, though. There is water poison. Is that what it's called? Water poisoning?
Maybe, yeah.
You can drink so much water that you dilute your electrolytes in your body so much that you can faint or cramp up or even worse. So there is a level of drinking water that can be toxic to the body for that reason. So don't go crazy. I would say nobody needs to be drinking more than 2 gallons of water.
Well,
would you agree with that?
I mean, unless you're an endurance-based athlete and you're doing like 8 to 10 hours of exercise.
But if you're doing that sort of thing, then you're also probably taking electrolytes along the way. So anyway, stay hydrated to lose fat.
Number 4, fuel your workouts well. This is something that can be really overlooked. Meal timing, this is where it comes into play. And it is somewhat important what you're eating before and after your workouts. And more than anything, how much you're eating before and after your workouts. No matter how much of a caloric deficit you're at, you should be making sure that you're getting some quality meal in before your workouts. You have energy to get your exercise in.
Because part of losing mostly fat and as little muscle as possible is going to be in keeping your intensity up at the gym. You want to still be lifting heavy. You want to still be lifting with intensity and a decent amount of volume. And without fuel, without fueling properly, your workouts are going to be on the decline. And I mean, even with the absolute best planning, when you're cutting for something because your calories are getting lowered, most people's workouts suffer to some degree. You want to minimize this as much as humanly possible. So I would say taking a large portion of food, a large portion of your daily calories before and after your workout. So
yeah, that's probably not what people are going to want to hear either when they're, you know, at a caloric deficit and they want to space out their meals as much as possible. But like Danny's saying, I mean, you should have larger meals before and after your workout.
I would say probably half of your daily calories should be split up before and after your workout, meaning, you know, 25% before, 25% after, mostly of protein and carbohydrates, keeping the fat to the other portion of the day.
Which is helpful because the fat will keep you feeling full for longer throughout
the
day.
Exactly, in the rest of
the day. Carbohydrates will work, exactly.
And the carbohydrates are going to help refuel glycogen, help re-up leptin, which we'll get to a little bit later, and obviously the protein is going to help with muscle protein synthesis. All very important to help keep that workout intensity up, keep the muscles full and growing. And, well, your muscles are not going to grow when you're cutting. First of all, everybody wants to gain muscle and lose fat.
But you want to maintain your muscle
mass. That's everybody's goal. But that's not going to happen, unfortunately, for 95% of people. So I shouldn't have said your muscles will keep growing because they won't. But it will help you maintain your muscles
as much
while
of it as
cutting.
Possible.
Right. Along with properly fueling your workouts with food, when you're at a caloric deficit, you know, you're not just at a caloric deficit. A lot of times you're getting fewer of various nutrients than you were at a higher caloric level. So it's probably more important to supplement with certain things when you're cutting. One of these things that I think is really important to supplement with, especially on a cut, is branched-chain amino acids. Branched-chain amino acids are the most important amino acids for muscle protein synthesis. Your body does not make them on its own, and you need to get them from outside sources. There are plenty of branched-chain amino acids in various vegan foods, but when you're working out and you're at a caloric deficit, your body can burn muscle for fuel, which we just talked about, which is why you want to make sure that you're eating enough around your workouts. But branched chain amino acids are just give you a little bit of extra edge in helping prevent muscle wasting while working out.
Yeah, I mean, it would make much more sense for your body to burn the amino acids that you're supplementing with for fuel instead of your actual muscle.
Exactly. So I suggest to many of my clients who are on a cut that they just put some branched chain amino acids in their water, 5 to 10 grams, depending on the person and their size, and sip it throughout the workout. If for whatever reason anybody is doing fasted cardio, which I don't particularly recommend, but if you're going to do that, definitely, definitely, definitely take branched chain amino acids while you do that to help prevent muscle loss.
Yeah, I mean, in general, when you're dieting down, you're going to be taking in fewer of everything. Not only fewer nutrients, fewer calories as well. So this is where it becomes really, really important. I'd like to reiterate to keep track of everything that you're doing and make sure you're giving, supplying your body with what it needs. Number 5, get your body into an eating routine. Routine is really important. If you look up any of the most successful athletes, there's one thing that they all have in common. They do the same thing over and over again because that's how they get results. There's something to be said for consistency in how you eat, when you eat, how you train, when you train, and to have those, you know, to do the same thing over and over again.
Yeah. It's never going to be perfect. You're never going to be able to do the exact same thing every day, nor should you, you know, eat the exact same thing every single day. That's a surefire way to go crazy and fly off the handle and binge on a bunch of junk and blah, blah, blah. But what we mean by this is eating similarly every day, having some sort of a plan of what you're going to eat and when is super, super helpful in figuring out what's working for you and what's not working for you in terms of energy, in terms of strength. I can give you an example because this is kind of a hard thing to put into words. So as you mostly know, Giacomo and I both follow a flexible dieting eating program almost exclusively. So we don't have any foods that are off limits, and we just eat what we feel like eating, broken down into specific times. We eat what fits our macros, basically. But we've both found that we end up eating the same thing almost every day.
Like, I'm going to usually have oats in the morning for breakfast because I know that before I go to work out, if I have a nice bowl of oats, my stomach's going to feel better in the gym. If I have a giant bowl of salad with nuts and seeds, you know, I might not feel that great at the gym while I work out. It's not that it's bad for my body. It's just me personally, I feel more comfortable having certain foods before I train.
Right. But if you ate, you know, I think you eat like 5 times a day. If you eat 5 different meals every single day, you would never really know what is working well for you and what isn't working well for you. You know what I mean? How could you possibly try? Well, this made me feel a certain way. If you switch out like a food at a time or one meal at a time, because you're going to get sick of these meals on a cutting, especially on a cutting diet, you'll get sick of certain meals after a while. After my last show prep, I don't ever want to eat tofu and brown rice and broccoli ever again in that combination. I followed a really strict meal plan last time and it kind of drove me nuts.
I got a little tired of sweet potatoes myself, but I switched to white potatoes just recently and it's like I found my love of potatoes all over again.
You switched one food, right?
Yeah. Because
that's very easy to be able to feel, you know, if it made a difference. You know, if you switched one food and then the next day you were like, oh, I feel bloated and crappy and gassy or whatever, you would probably know, oh, it's that one food that I changed yesterday.
Yeah, or the way you're preparing that food.
You know what I mean? So when we say get your body into an eating routine, stick with like a basic skeleton of what you're going to eat every day. And then as you tire of things, sort of switch out one food at a time or one small meal at a time. And that way you can still keep track really closely of what's going on while still having variety and not absolutely going crazy. And also if you eat similarly every day, having one meal out for your grandmother's birthday at a restaurant or something like that isn't going to just absolutely destroy you because you've been tracking what you're eating and eating very specific amounts. And once you have a plan like that, it's really easy to hop right back on it.
Number 6, set protein high enough to minimize muscle loss.
This is kind of a topic that's a little bit controversial within the vegan community, because a lot of people within the vegan movement are actually sort of like anti-protein. And I get it. Like, we've had protein and like, where do you get your protein shoved down your throat for the last 10 years or whatever? So you just kind of resent it. I totally get it. But in the cases of building muscle and or losing fat and maintaining that muscle, making sure that you have adequate protein is actually pretty important. When you're looking to build muscle and you're eating at a caloric maintenance or a caloric surplus, it's pretty easy to hit your protein.
Oh yeah.
Right? Even from a whole food, no supplement, plant-based diet, you can do a good job of getting a fair amount of protein because you're eating a high amount of calories. However, once you start cutting and you drop your calories low, if you don't pay attention, your protein is going to drop as well.
Yeah, it's very, very easy for your protein to drop way more than you want it to by not being mindful about the type of foods that you're eating when you're eating less.
Basically, your protein goals don't really need to change whether you're looking to build muscle or looking to lose fat. Your protein is still going to stay in a pretty small range, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Without getting too much into it, let's just, for the purposes of this, say you can keep your protein levels the exact same whether you're building muscle or dieting to maintain muscle. And if you're not careful, you will probably not get that much. And then you're much more likely to lose muscle as you're dieting down.
And I think of it this way, even without tracking numbers or anything specific like that, let's just say that you know that you're getting results by eating a certain way in regards to muscle building, right? Most likely you're getting a certain amount of protein that's working for your body. Now think about the amount of calories that you're eating at that moment in time. Right now you're gonna change and you're gonna start eating less because you're dieting down for whatever reason. Now your calories are gonna drop, your protein's gonna drop if you keep eating the same foods.
The same style
of eating. Exactly. So it is helpful to change things up and make sure that whatever amount of protein is working for your body, for your goals, that you keep taking in that amount.
Which goes back to tracking. You know, yes. Keep track of what you're eating. If you're eating whatever amount of protein you're eating before you start dieting, keep that number the same all the way through. This may mean having to change up your food sources a little bit and focusing on some higher protein foods, whether that be lentils instead of chickpeas, or seitan instead of tofu, or Beyond Meat instead of tofurkey sausages. Like,
right.
You can go any direction you want with this. But, you know, adding in a protein powder, maybe you didn't have it at all in the off season or your building season, but adding in a scoop of protein powder can make all the difference.
Or maybe someone's already supplementing with a meal replacement powder and they might want to swap it out for a protein powder, for example.
Right. It's just about keeping track and making sure you're still hitting that same number. Now, everybody's going to ask, well, what should that number be? And there are so many different opinions about this. So, you know, take it from where it's coming from, I guess, and do your own research and see what jives with how you feel. Just check out some scientific studies and, you know, draw your own conclusions. Always draw your own conclusions. But I recommend anywhere between 0.8 and 1.2 grams of protein per pound of lean body weight for strength training individuals with physique goals. That's what I recommend for most people.
Number 7, load up on non-starchy vegetables.
Eat your veggies. It's really, really that simple. They're loaded with nutrients, vitamins, minerals. They taste really good. They fill you up. They're very few calories for quite a bit of food. Eat your veggies. It's really that simple. Non-starchy veggies. I'm not talking about potatoes and yams and beets. I'm talking about broccoli, kale.
Dark green leafies.
Yeah. Zucchini, squash. Etc.
Yeah, it's kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, it really is a no-brainer, but I'm going to say it anyway. Eat your veggies.
Number 8, go for volume in your complex carbohydrates and fats.
All right, so this is probably my favorite one on here. This is my favorite.
You don't say.
My favorite dieting tip ever.
You?
So I am a huge volume eater. Give me all the food all the time.
Oh, man. If you had any idea how much time Danny spends researching the foods that have the most volume in it.
Because I like my stomach to feel full. Is that a crime? I don't think so. I hate dieting. It's terrible. I don't like feeling hungry. It's miserable. So I find the highest volume foods that I possibly can. And as I'm cutting calories, I will switch things out to higher volume foods to keep my stomach feeling full. Now, what this means is you're going to go for foods that have the lower calories per gram of actual food. For example, yams and sweet potatoes are very, very calorically dense. They're, you know, they're great foods. I love them, but they're super calorically dense. You get, I can't remember the number exactly off the top of my head. I want to say in 150 grams of yams, it's like 44 grams of carbohydrates.
Oh, it's even less than half?
Yeah.
Oh, but I thought it was about half, roughly.
If you switch it to white potatoes, you get way more food for the same amount of carbohydrates. Take that even further. When you have to cut it even further, you can switch it to butternut squash, and you get way more of that for the same number of carbohydrate grams. And then past that, you can switch it to spaghetti squash or summer squash, and you get even more food for the same number of carbohydrates. Along that same line, oats are fantastic, but they're, you know, they're pretty calorically dense. Yeah. Although I'll give this to oats. They're pretty filling. They're pretty filling, even though you get technically a small amount of grain. So I like to switch that eventually, as I cut down, switch that to a puffed Kamut cereal, which you get a crap ton of.
Puffed anything, really. Puff rice, puff corn, puff grains.
It's like crazy. You get like a cup and a half of it for like 8 grams of carbs or something like that. I mean, it basically dissolves like styrofoam the second it hits your almond.
But whatever, you get a giant bowl.
It's delicious.
fewer calories.
Kelp noodles, tofu noodles.
Kelp, tofu, the potato noodles.
They're like magic, I don't know what they're called. Sweet like potato. Magic noodles or something. Mm-hmm. You get a ton of those. Those fill up your stomach for a very, very low amount of calories. If you are a person who loves fruit, I love fruit. As I get into contest prep and dieting, I switch, you know, I don't have bananas anymore because they're super, super calorically dense.
Strawberries.
But I'll switch it to strawberries or grapefruit. Switch to lower calorie fruits like berries, apples, grapefruits. Those are really, really good. Instead of, you know, mango, pineapple, super calorically dense as far as fruit goes anyway. Fats. Avoid oils. I avoid oils pretty much year round regardless because I just want to eat food. Like, I can't stress this to you guys enough. I want to eat so much food all the time. So I don't eat oils because I'd rather like chew on my food. And for that reason, when I'm choosing my fats, I like to pick from things that are less calorically dense than oil, which is the most calorically dense food in the world.
Yeah, it's like a tablespoon of oil is what, 14 grams of fat? Mm-hmm. And how many nuts? I mean, you get like a handful of nuts for 14 grams of fat or more, right?
About a quarter cup.
Quarter cup,
roughly, depending on the nut.
Way
and you also
more.
Get
you
some
rather?
Protein, you get some vitamins and minerals, you get some carbohydrates, but there's fiber in there as well. So nuts, nut butter, avocado, even some shredded coconut is, to me, a better choice than an oil. Some other sort of miscellaneous high-volume foods are almond milk, the unsweetened vanilla almond milk, instead of, say, soy milk or rice milk or any of the other flavored or sweetened milks.
You can add a little bit of water to your milk, too, to thin it out.
Yeah, you could water it down a little bit if you wanted to. That's a huge one. You can make all sorts of stuff with that as well. Outside of that, the most high-volume foods are going to be vegetables, which we sort of touched upon a minute ago. Load up on vegetables. They're going to make you feel full, give you tons of vitamins and minerals. But in general, I say go for volume. If you have problems feeling hungry and you don't like it, find the higher-volume foods and incorporate those into your meal plans. You'll be very happy that you did.
Number 9, refeed properly.
Refeeding is basically a day where you bring your calories back up to around maintenance level, particularly boosting carbohydrates up a lot, dropping fat pretty low, and even lowering protein a little bit for that day. And the reason for this is that dieting causes your hormones to change actually relatively quickly. And the main hormone that I'm talking about here is leptin, which is often known as the fat burning hormone. It is released from your fat cells and correlates very, very strongly with not only your body fat percentage, but also how much you're eating or not eating. So within a week, within just a week, your leptin levels can drop anywhere from 30 to 50%, which is basically going to send a message to your brain to say, like, we're going into a famine. Please stop burning fat. Sending hunger signals. Have her find food. She needs food right now.
Yeah, I mean, your body is very intuitive, and it will adapt to any environment and any situation that it knows it has to for a longer period of time.
But so, you can see how this would be a problem when you're dieting. Like, who wants their body to start burning fat slowly and feel hungry all the time? That sucks. That's counter to what your goals are at this point. So refeeding, boosting your carbohydrates up, that's what your leptin responds best to, is carbohydrates. So having a day where you boost your carbohydrates up sort of raises your leptin levels, sort of chills out those messages it's sending to your brain for another
week
or so.
Tells your body it's okay to start burning fat again.
Right. It lets your body know you're not in a famine and it can afford to burn some fat, and you know, you don't feel as hungry.
Instead of just having to drop calories and calories and calories, you don't want to have to do that.
So I would say you don't have to start doing this until at least a couple weeks into your diet for most people, unless you're starting off pretty lean, then you might want to start it, you know, right from the get-go. But if you have a fair amount of weight to lose, you can not do it for the first few weeks. But then I would recommend doing it once a week. Men tend to respond better to one larger refeed per week. Women tend to respond better to smaller refeeds a little bit more frequently, like once every 5 days or so. So not a hard and fast rule here about how frequently or how much you should boost your calories up to, because your maintenance level is going to change as your body changes. So again, this all goes back to keeping track of everything, recalculating what you think your maintenance level is, bumping it up to that. And everybody loves refeed day. I mean, shit, you get to eat carbohydrates, you know, a pretty significant amount of carbohydrates compared to what you've probably been eating.
Knowing that what you're doing is going to trigger fat loss again, I get to eat more, and I'm telling my body that it's time to drop more weight. And it's a good feeling.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, have their refeed and wake up the next morning leaner. That is a very, very common thing to hear. Yeah, and fuller, like fuller in their muscles.
Right.
So refeeding properly is super important. What happens if you don't refeed properly? Your fat loss is going to slow down significantly. You're going to be really, really hungry, and having your hormones sort of jacked up for too long can cause long-term damage, where it can take a long time for your hormones to sort of re-regulate themselves. Your leptin receptors can start to not work as efficiently, which would suck for the long term. So, you know, dieting is not something your body naturally wants to do for an extended period of time. And refeeding sort of helps keep you in a healthy place throughout your cutting cycle.
Finally, number 10 is reevaluate regularly. When you're dieting down, your body's going to start acting differently. And you need to be aware of these changes so that you can continue to make changes and work with your body and not against it. If you keep doing the same thing over and over again during a dieting down plan, not only are you not going to have the right results that you're looking for, chances are you're not going to be able to last. So as your body starts to make these changes, take a look at what's happening. Take a look at what results you have gotten, have not gotten. Figure out what foods are working for you, which ones aren't working for you. It's just so important to keep track of all this and have this data so that you can figure out what you need to do.
A lot of people go into a fat loss diet, a weight loss diet, a cutting diet, whatever, they start off with a meal plan or a diet plan or whatever, and they think they're just going to follow that from beginning to end, and that's how they're going to be successful. And that's they may be, but I mean, that's just luck. They'd be much more successful if they reevaluated along the way. Reevaluating once every other week, I think, checking out your workout routine, your cardio routine, and your diet are every other week is going to give you enough time to make some solid changes as you need to. And you don't have to make huge changes. Making small changes as you go is going to be much more successful than, you know, slashing 500 calories right off the top and adding an extra 45 minutes of cardio every day. Like, that's a surefire way to burn out and send your body into freak out mode to not burn anything off. So reevaluating, I would say reevaluating every other week is a good plan. You don't want to get too obsessive. Check it every week. Unless you're getting ready for, like, if you're in contest prep, that's a little different.
That's a whole different story.
That's a different story. These rules do all apply to contest prep, just usually more severely. But anyway, checking every other week should be sufficient to make the changes that you need to make and help you keep moving along smoothly to your goals.
Yeah. So let's just say you have a client that comes off the street and is looking for a fat loss plan. How would you set that up, Danny?
Well, I probably wouldn't get started with them right away, because the most important thing for me to start off with is for them to keep a food journal for at least a few days so I can have an idea of what their current maintenance level is calorically. A lot of people want to, you know, just body weight times 15 is your caloric maintenance, but that's bullshit because every person's body is different. Every person's metabolism is different. I've had people who are of a perfectly healthy weight come to me and I find out they're eating something crazy like 800 calories a day. That means your metabolism is screwed up. And inversely, I've had, you know, petite women come to me eating 2,400 calories a day and maintaining their weight on that. So their metabolisms are through the roof. And these aren't really extreme cases. I find people to have sort of strange metabolisms based on what you're looking at all the time. I don't know if it's a vegan thing or what, but I find it a lot. So having them keep a food journal is going to tell me their caloric maintenance level, roughly. And also, obviously, I want to know what kind of workouts they've been doing, if they have any injuries, blah, 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 blah. But from there, I'm not going to just slash their calories in half or anything like that. Usually, we're going to implement an intelligent training and cardio routine for them. And then I'm probably going to take their however many calories they were eating, and depending on the person, cut it anywhere from, you know, 200 to 300 calories and start there and see what happens. A lot of times these, and then from there, that's just the initial one. From there, you don't need to make such huge cuts. You can make 50, 75 calorie cuts and see what happens from there. Every time you reevaluate, like we talked about earlier, the initial cut is usually a little bit bigger than the following ones. So I'd say to find your caloric maintenance, cut it anywhere from 200 to 300 calories. And then from there, reevaluate every other week. And if you're still making progress, don't cut calories. If you're still making progress, there's no reason to continue to cut calories. You want to be dieting on as many calories as possible to maintain metabolic health, to maintain hormone health, to maintain your sanity. And of course, always make sure that you're following an intelligent training program that includes, you know, heavy lifting, HIIT training of some kind, and does not include hours and hours and hours on end of steady state cardio.
Yeah, I mean, you could add a ton of cardio and you could cut a ton of calories, and then obviously you're going to have results from that, but wouldn't you rather use it as a tool and the least amount of cardio that you can do and the fewest amount of calories that you can cut and still make progress is a win, because you're still making progress. And you should find out what, you know, these small steps will really help you over time instead of just slashing things and then all of a sudden your progress comes to a screeching halt because you've exhausted all of your options. And the only way to go is by eating even less and doing even more cardio. You don't want to be caught in that trap.
Yeah, when you follow that kind of a just excessively dieting and way over cardioing and things like that, you may reach the goal that you want to reach. But as soon as you stop doing that, and you will stop doing that because it's not maintainable.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, most people don't want to survive on the fewest amount of calories possible. At some point, you're going to want to eventually eat more again every day, but you're also going to want to still have a good body composition, a body that is lean and healthy, and right. you want to be
but
fit.
But as soon as you stop dieting on a ridiculously low number of calories and exercising for 3 hours a day, you're going to blow up. You're going to blow up. Your body doesn't even have a choice. It's going to blow up. And you're going to hate it. But if you diet slowly, train intelligently, and don't just drill yourself into the ground with cardio, then your results can be much more sustainable. A lot of people come in and think that they get their starting plan and then they're like, well, I'm just going to slash 100 calories every single week until I reach my deadline. And how can you possibly predict that from the get-go? Like, what if after the first week you've made excellent progress? Why would you just slash another 100 calories? And why would you continue to do that all along? I have some people who make great progress and we don't need to touch their meal plan for a month. And then I have other people who I need to change it regularly every single week. So, it's all about checking in on yourself and making sure that you're on track and not overdoing the changes out of anxiety that you're not making progress fast enough, which is super, super common when you're coaching yourself, which again is why it's super important to track your progress like we talked about last week and track your food intake like we talked about earlier. So, boy, I'm really beating that point right into the ground, but hopefully you get it. So that is how I would go about setting up a cutting program right from the get-go. Finding out the right number of calories from the start would just be to cut a couple hundred off the top, make sure that protein is high enough, and then get the remaining calories from high volume carbohydrates and fats.
All right, and moving on to our product review, which I am actually very, very excited about. I'm waving around a box of them right now. These things are awesome. Beast Burgers from Beyond Meat. They're starting to pop up on shelves now this month, and Beyond Meat was nice enough to send some out to us, and we got a chance to try them.
Yeah, I cooked them up earlier this week. They're actually pretty decent size. They do live up to the name Beast Burger.
It's a quarter pounder.
Yeah. I didn't realize it was a quarter mm-hmm. pounder. Yeah, they were pretty decent in size. I'm not sure how they're going to be on the shelves, but they came in two packs of quarter pounders. And they are soy-free, gluten-free, and GMO-free.
And delicious.
And they were delicious. They have more omegas than salmon, is what it claims on the front here.
I think you take it's comparing it to a quarter pound serving of salmon on the nutritional comparison chart and saying there's more omega-3s in this burger than within a quarter pound of salmon. And then is in the way that they're comparing it to a quarter pound of beef is a 80% lean cut. And this burger has more protein and more iron in a quarter pound of a beast burger than a quarter pound of 80% lean beef.
But that's pretty cool. And then on the side it says, boasts sea buckthorn, shave grass, moringa leaf, beet juice, mesquite, and pomegranate seeds, and delivers generous amounts of calcium, vitamin B6, vitamin B12, and D. Actually, it does. Calcium is 35% of your daily calcium in here, 20% of your vitamin D, which it doesn't say if it's D2 or D3, so I'll have to check that out. 25% of your vitamin B6, 30% of your vitamin B12, 15% of your daily iron. The macros on this, if anybody's interested in a 4-ounce burger, was 260 calories, 16 grams of fat, 2.2 of which are omega-3s, 7 grams of carbs, 4 of which are fiber, and 23 grams of protein.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, veggie burgers have come a long, long way. I mean, I take this burger, I cook it up, and I find this is the type of vegan burger that would go well at a barbecue. I mean, it grills up nicely. It's got a very similar, as a former meat eater, it's got a very similar texture. And it also has a very, very good taste to it. Yeah. Didn't taste like it, though. Not even a hint of it. See, that's the crazy thing. I mean, because you have this burger that's jacked up with greens and vitamins and minerals and nutrition and omega-3s. It's got a ton of protein in it, yet you don't taste any of that. All you have is just this patty that cooks up really well and tastes like a burger. It's a win.
Yeah, actually, its ingredient list is pretty impressive as well. And it's soy and gluten-free, which I don't give a crap about, but I know a lot of people do. It's mostly the protein source in this is pea protein.
I'm sold. Well, anyway.
So, yeah, I think it's going to do really well. Keep your eyes open for it. You know, try it when it comes out. They make sliders, too,
mm-hmm.
which we have a box of, but we haven't tried them yet. I imagine they're the same, only smaller.
Each burger is 3 sliders.
Yeah. Anyway, so Beast Burger, Beyond Meat. We already loved the company. Now we love this, their new product as well.
If you're an online shopper, I know veganessentials.com is definitely carrying them as soon as they're available, which will be this month. And otherwise, go to your local specialty grocery store. All right, and now it's time for our question segment of today's show. All right, and this question comes across via email from Jackie. And Jackie is working with a trainer right now, and trainer keeps telling her that she should get more protein in and to continue to build muscle, which she wants to do. So she's not sure about how much protein to eat and what the composition should be. Right now, she's following a starch solution McDougal style diet, low fat, high carb, relatively low protein. And she's being told not to worry much about protein. She's gaining muscle, but recovery time is slow. And it's been about 4 or 5 days from her last workout, and she's still sore. So how much protein should she be taking in?
Okay, so she's 5'3" and 162 pounds. In this particular instance, I would base my protein calculation probably on lean body mass rather than body weight, just based on this right here. I would say probably aiming to get about 115 grams of protein or so, maybe a little bit higher if you're over 40 years old, which it doesn't say, but about 115 grams or so. So what I know about the starch solution diet is that it's basically a non-raw version of 80-10-10, which is a super high carbohydrate, low fat, low protein. And while, yes, you can live this way, you know, they always say you don't have to worry about protein. And like, if you're just sitting on the couch doing nothing, then you don't really have to worry about protein. As long as you're getting enough calories, you'll probably get enough protein to live. But if you're strength training and have physique goals of any kind, then I would say that you need more protein, and you do need to focus on making sure that you get some protein dense foods in there instead of just grains. If you are drawn to that style of eating, the starch solution style of eating, I would say focus more on eating beans than just eating straight grains like rice, because they are higher in protein. And if that's the majority of what you're eating, then you might actually surprise yourself with the amount of protein that you can get from that. Adding in some nutritional yeast, which is also fortified with vitamin B12, which isn't quite enough for you to hit your daily requirements because you only absorb like 1 to 2% of vitamin B12 that you take. But, you know, it can't hurt. That's going to help as well. Getting more protein is going to help you to recover more quickly, not feel so fatigued. I mean, think about it. Every time you work out, your muscle fibers are breaking down. When they break apart, they need amino acids to go in there and repair them. And yes, there are amino acids in everything that we eat. But the most important amino acids that they need are the branched chain amino acids, leucine, valine, and isoleucine. And those are not very high in starchy foods. Whether you choose to supplement with a protein powder or just incorporate higher protein foods like a tofu, tempeh. If you're looking to keep your fat really low, the protein powder is probably the way to go. Seitan is also a great way to go. And if you're eating starches, then wheat probably is not a problem for you. So seitan would probably be a good thing to incorporate as well, as it does keep the fat relatively low. Although if you don't have a heart problem, I wouldn't advise in keeping fat very, very low, because fat also plays a huge role in hormone balance and hormone regulation. As we age, our hormones change, and you need to make sure that you're getting enough fat to allow your hormones to function in a healthy way, and also to help you absorb fat-soluble vitamins like A, D, E, and K. So overall, in general, I'm not a huge fan of the starch solution style of eating, and I would recommend getting more protein and probably a little bit more fat too for your overall health, and especially if you have strength training goals. So I hope that's helpful to you, Jackie. All right, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Vegan Proteins Muscles by Brussels Radio. I'm Danny.
And I'm Giacomo.
And we will talk to you in a couple weeks. In the meantime, if you have any questions, feel free to get at us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at Vegan Proteins.
See you soon.